is great.
Thanks again. It's a real pleasure to be here, and I would like to first of all thank ARC for inviting me. The very fact that ARC has a dialogue process to engage in is something that would be unheard of in the United States. The fact that you have an agriculture commissioner in Europe who has opened up a dialogue with civil society of this nature is itself something that would be very unfamiliar, much less having so many civil society organizations get together, as Ari has explained, to form some common positions to take into that conversation. So it's a tremendous pleasure and honor for me to have an opportunity to be here to learn. I was asked to comment from an international perspective on ARC's communication and to provide some thoughts on how the issues and proposals from ARC might resonate outside of Europe and suggest some possible areas for international alliances and dialogue on shared concerns. It's tough to represent the entire rest of the world, but I will see if I can see what I can do, and the moderator will warn me when my time is almost up. As for ARC's relevance outside of Europe, I think the short answer is that in focusing on the neglect of genuine rural development and on the need for a agricultural renaissance and a new agricultural paradigm, ARC has pinpointed problems that are not just European, but are truly global. But these are issues that are experienced and responded to differently in different regions. And although there is not enough time to characterize the full variety of international experience, I do want to try to address not only the common, but also the differentiated nature of both these issues and the opportunities that I would see for some joint work on positive change. In the United States, as in Europe, rural development and agricultural growth have been conflated in policy. They haven't been recognized as the different but overlapping processes that they are. Worse still, farm policies in the U.S. have actually undermined rural development or actively underdeveloped rural areas, so that in the past several decades, these policies have been focused on driving down commodity prices and increasing production with no notion of fairness or equity or social and environmental impacts. And the result has been agricultural growth at the expense of, rather than for the benefit of, rural communities and the environment. In place of what once were farming or ranching communities, we now have a land of low-wage exploited labor on large plantations. We have family farms that are kept afloat financially only by off-farm work and government payments. And we have many deeply indebted contract farmers who own neither the land that they farm nor the crops that they produce. I'm afraid this may be your future that I'm describing, but it is our present in the rural United States. There is certainly some resonance in the U.S. with ARC's rural development reform agenda as well. 2 weeks ago, IATP co-hosted the National Rural Assembly, which is a gathering of several hundred rural leaders from around the United States. The fact that rural development and agriculture are not the same was actually a key theme in this recent rural assembly, as was the changing face of rural America. Currently, only 3% of rural people in the United States are actually engaged in agricultural production. And 48% of rural Americans are not of European or Caucasian descent. The old image of rural America as being made up of family farmers of European descent is no longer true, and the policies that were based on that image are also in need of reform. When she addressed the first National Rural Assembly in 2008, Hillary Clinton, who at that time was still a presidential candidate, said that if she were elected president, she would change the name of the United States Department of Agriculture to the United States Department of Rural Development. And Tom Vilsack, who is our current Secretary of Agriculture, spends a lot of time promoting rural development as very central to the USDA's mission. Unfortunately, though, for the most part, America's political elites are fully invested in the dominant paradigm of industrial agriculture that ARC has said we need to move away from. And we're also very much invested in the myth that American farmers must feed the world. Rural development in the United States is at best seen as a safety net for inefficient or uncompetitive producers, regions, and people. And the very notion of sustainable agriculture has simply become a branding slogan for Monsanto and Cargill. Moreover, national politics in the United States is focused on our economic crisis and on the 2012 presidential elections, both of which make meaningful dialogue from ARC with political leaders in Washington about CAP reform or global agricultural policies unlikely. Even the renewal of our own U.S. Farm Bill, scheduled for 2012, will probably be pushed back until after the presidential elections. But although meaningful discussion with government leaders around and ARC is unlikely, I think there would be considerable value in more systematic... Okay. I think there would be considerable value in more systematic dialogue between civil society and farmer organizations in the U.S. and their counterparts in Europe. My presence here is a reflection of my organization's interest in learning from and supporting the ARC process as the 2012 Farm Bill approaches. And there are areas, I think, in which U.S. experiences could help inform your efforts as well. For example, I think of the work of the Commodity Markets Oversight Commission, a very unusual alliance in the United States, made up largely of small and medium-sized trade associations, which was able to successfully push for financial reforms in the U.S. to make markets more transparent and to limit damaging speculation that has hurt farmers in the United States and around the world. In short, this is a bad time to engage the U.S. government, but it's a very good time to engage what has become an increasingly broad-based social movement in the United States that is focused on changing our food system in the sorts of fundamental ways that ARC is proposing. Aside from the U.S. and EU, the other global agricultural giant is China, first or second in the world in the production of maize, wheat, rice, pork, seafood, and many other agricultural products. China's food safety scandals and its environmental crises are well known. And in contrast to its vibrant cities, there's widespread economic stagnation and unrest in rural China. And yet the situation there could be much worse. China has experienced no major famine in 50 years, nor is its growing appetite for food starving the poor in other countries due to excessive imports and impacts on global food markets. China is able to feed 22% of the world's people on just 9% of its arable land. One reason they are able to do so is because in their struggles with all of the problems of their food systems, the Chinese have adopted at least some aspects of ARC's approach to agriculture and rural policy. A decade ago, the agricultural policies of Jiang Zemin, the former premier, which focused on squeezing peasants and producing cheap food, were replaced by something called Sannong, or the Three Rural Issues, a set of policies aimed at addressing not only agricultural production, but also farmers' livelihoods and the welfare of rural communities and their development. This sounds a lot like what ARC is promoting in CAP reform. And China has long made skillful use of supply management, not only as a hedge against famine, but as a tool for ensuring reasonable prices for consumers and better prices for farmers. In other respects, especially ARC's plans for more true greening of agriculture, China has a long way to go. Although there have been some large-scale programs for payment for environmental services that have been very effective. But I think redefining rural development, or rural reconstruction as it's known in China, could be a very productive area for engagement between China and ARC in looking at how rural development can be reborn. Okay, that's two countries down and about 160 to go. Let me resort to some shorthand and generalizations to keep within time. I think, though, that they are not entirely inaccurate. Over the past three decades, and as well in the development discourse of the Bretton Woods institutions, rural development across the global south has been largely abandoned, and government attention to agriculture has focused on ensuring inexpensive raw materials for industries and cheap food for politically volatile urban populations. Ironically, this squeezing of the countryside has simply driven more and more people into cities, hence raising the stakes in the cheap food for cheap labor game, so that rising prices bring not just protests, but in the last several years, riots and regime change. So I think in much of the developing world, this notion of taking rural development seriously would have tremendous resonance, and thinking about sharing lessons and how those policies affect each other is very important for ARC's work. The neglect of rural development is only part of the story, though. Trade liberalization, structural adjustment, land grabbing, volatile world markets, and an increasingly unstable global climate have all taken their toll in rural areas around the global south. The old pattern of a half century of falling commodity prices and dumping, that time is over. It's been replaced in the last 5 years with a new reality, which is high but unstable prices and markets, and unpredictable extreme weather. The situation's not all bad, though. Drastic times call for drastic measures. And so, with all its problems, the Global South is also a hotbed of resistance and alternative approaches, many of which resonate strongly with the ARC communication. Sustainable, small-scale, low-input agriculture has been scaled up out of necessity in countries like Ethiopia and Indonesia and Cuba. Governments in Africa have risked the wrath of the IMF and the World Bank in order to subsidize inputs for small farmers and support domestic food production over cash crop exports. And while massive plantations gobble up more and more areas of the Amazon and Cerrado in Brazil, the landless workers movement has redistributed huge holdings in the northeast part of the country to hundreds of thousands of peasants for smallholder agricultural production. There are therefore many opportunities, I think, for ARC to find like-minded groups and form alliances around the world. In civil society, I would say there are three types of groups that are definitely worth engaging. The first are international development and environment organizations. Groups such as Greenpeace, Oxfam, ActionAid, and many faith-based development agencies. These groups in recent years, I think, have come to a broad consensus about a number of issues that are close to ARC's priorities. Rural development, small-scale agroecology, food sovereignty, and fair trade. And I think that we can see in things like Oxfam's new global campaign for agriculture a tremendous amount of connections to the kinds of issues that ARC is talking about, both in terms of rural development and changing the paradigm of agriculture. Another group or set of groups worth engaging, I think, is the global peasant movement, characterized by Via Campesina. This group, which represents millions of peasants and small farmers worldwide, has a very strong commitment to food sovereignty, and also within the ARC communication, respect for and support for non-commercial subsistence farming, which has been neglected by rural and agricultural policies to date. Third, there's a stratum of farmer associations that is commercial, so they are not members of the global peasant movement, but they're not yet dominated by agribusiness, as are farm organizations in the United States like the Farm Bureau. This includes groups like the National Farmers Union in the United States and in Canada, and many farmers associations in the global south, such as the Asian Farmers Association, ROPA in West Africa, many groups in Central and South America. These groups would share many of ARC's concerns with issues like market stabilization measures, supply management, fair trade, and small-scale farming. I think that there are also individual and groups of national governments where there are opportunities for contact and exchange with ARC's priorities. Among the large emerging economies, also known as the BASIC countries, like Europe, they are experiencing the problems of the failing industrial agricultural paradigm, as well as rural decline. But these countries also have the economic and political power to address them. I found it particularly significant that in a recent meeting of the agricultural ministers of the BASIC countries, there was agreement that they should jointly explore development of international food reserves in order to bring greater stability to food markets. The same thing is true of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, which has already a long-established rice reserve that has been very effective in dealing with price fluctuations in that region. The issue of expanding the policy space available to national governments for determining domestic food production policies, mentioned by ARC, has long been supported within the World Trade Organization by governments in Africa and Latin America. Beyond the WTO, I think ARC may want to consider other international agreements and institutions. Rio Plus 20, the Food Security Commission of the United Nations, and the Global Climate Convention are three key sites where the struggle between industrial farming and agroecology paradigms will be extreme over the next several years, and where ARC could gain strength but also contribute. IATP has been involved in strategizing and coalition building in all of these areas, and we would welcome ARC and ARC members' involvement. I want to keep within time, but I also want to end with a small challenge from an international perspective to the reach of ARC's vision. ARC's communication is absolutely correct in underscoring the need for EU intervention in cases of market failure through measures such as supply management. But for IATP and for many of the organizations that I've referred to, and in fact the social movements that I'm referring to in the Global South, there's another related problem that is not market failure, it's market rigging, wherein the economic power of the largest firms in the food system is transformed into political power, which in turn further consolidates the economic dominance of those firms, both within countries and internationally. In terms of technology or in terms of politics, we can now say that industrial agriculture, like America's largest banks, is considered too big to fail. Over the past 3 years, we've seen the effects of this in the financial industry. But I think that it's equally, if not more serious, in our food system globally. In order to truly achieve the paradigm shift that ARC is proposing, we believe that it's not enough to simply promote green farming or a rural renaissance. We will also have to actually challenge and limit the power of that small handful of firms in each subsector of the food system that currently drives and benefits most from our unsustainable and unjust food system. This may not be politically achievable or even appropriate as part of CAP reform. CAP has very specific goals, I understand that. But I do hope that ARC's members will consider this issue and consider how it might be achieved partially within CAP, but also elsewhere through financial and antitrust measures, as well as through the democratic process. It's been an honor to participate, and I look forward to learning more from all of you during the course of our discussions today. Thank you.